A Weekend with Jason Dacey replay from Money FM 89.3.
If you love somebody, set them free by Sting here on Money FM 89.3. That was from July 1985. The former lead singer of The Police is the subject of our pop culture segment with Neil Humphreys. Neil, we've got a lot to get through with Sting's career, but yes. My first memory of him was obviously in the 1970s when I was at secondary school. And probably my favourite Sting or Police song came out during that period, Message in a Bottle. And that came out in 1979, in September 1979, just as I was leaving secondary school in my native Sydney, Australia. And I remember at the end of secondary school, we all went on a camp, recreational camp. Pretty much this was an excuse so we can meet girls, right?
Of course.
All the school boys went there and we catch the train up to this recreational camp in a rural part of New South Wales. And this song, Message in a Bottle, was the anthem for this camp. It just kept playing all the time at the end of 1979 into 1980. And that was when I met Brian Harris, Frog Harris from Songland, who appear on this show sometimes as an expert from Canberra, Australia, because he worked as a record rep. That was the first time I saw him, and he looked like Mick Jagger, and he had the fat lips, and we were listening to this song, and he would sing this song along with everybody else. So that was my real introduction to The Police. And we'll talk about Sting's career as a solo artist after that, but I know you were quite a bit younger then at that period when he was with The Police, but obviously made a big impact with you.
Absolutely. I like a lot of The Police songs. In fact, it's interesting you mentioned Message in a Bottle, because it came out at a time when I was very young, and when the song was, it was number one I think in the UK or around there. It was a huge hit, but everybody wanted to make messages in a bottle. So my mother and the family, we went to the seaside, South End in sunny Essex.
Yes, yes, down south.
And I put in a note, like a pirate, you know, I put a note into a bottle, message in a bottle, and I set it off. I set it off, right, because of the song.
Because of the song. Right, this and is you absolutely were so
true,
young then.
Right, absolutely true. And we were thinking like pirates and messages and castaways and so on. But my mother, with a warped sense of humour, the tide was coming in, Jason. So the bottle kept coming back. It never went anywhere. So we sat there for like an hour and it just kept coming back to me. And once my mother stopped laughing, I just took the bottle back out of the sea and kept it. But no, Message in a Bottle was a big hit for me. Roxanne was around a lot when I was young.
And the vocals from Sting were incredible.
Yeah, of course. Every little thing she does is magic. And then later on, you know, I think it's their final album, Synchronicity, which was their biggest album, their biggest hits with things like Every Breath You Take. So,
but we did see a transition, didn't we, from a very basic kind of style, just three-piece. You know, you've got the bass player, you've got the guitarist, you've got the drummer. And then they started to get more and more commercial. And they were together from 1977 to 1985, The Police. And that's when, in 1986, Sting launched his solo career. They sold 100 million records. That's combined
huge
with Sting and The Police together. But he was always, they didn't like him, Neil.
They hated each other.
They really didn't get on well, because Sting, who was born in October 1951 in the UK, he, of course, was a school teacher. We know, Don't Stand So Close to
Correct.
Me. He was a school teacher for 2 years, and he was born as Gordon Matthew Thomas Sumner. But very quickly, he fell out with his bandmates.
Yeah, and you could tell, I can give you a very specific reason, example why. 2007, I was in Sydney with my family, and my family from the UK hadn't been to Sydney before.
Right.
And you know the area, right on the harbour, you have this nice area called The Rocks.
Yes, yes.
Right? It's pretty.
In fact, that's where the original convicts were, right?
That's right. And it's right beside the Sydney Harbour Bridge, beneath it.
Yes.
It's a great spot to get your photographs, and I wanted to take my family there, but this is a true story, but the area was cordoned off because there was a yacht moored there the size of Singapore, right? I mean, it was enormous. It made, you know, Roman Abramovich's yacht look like a dinky toy.
Yeah.
It was absolutely enormous. And I spoke to a staff member of the security, whatever they call it, at the marina, and he said, it's Sting's yacht.
Wow, because Sting's yacht at Sydney Harbour.
The police were there. This was 2007. This was part of the police reunion tour.
Yeah.
Sting would rock up in his yacht on his own with his family. The rest of the band, he's had to take commercial airlines.
You're
right?
Kidding.
He didn't even let them share a ride with him in their yacht.
Wow.
They were barely talking. The only reason they got back together in 2007 was purely for money. They didn't like each other. They didn't talk to each other. It made something like $400 million or some insane amount of money. And it was only because Sting initiated it.
Here's a quote from Andy Summers, by the way, just while you're on that point. Look, he was a very good-looking guy with a great voice, and he'd strip off on stage. We were dripping with number one records. It's a classic story. The lead singer starts to get more attention because he's the guy actually singing. And, of course, there's that ego that goes with it and control issues. He's not a team player, doesn't share credits, and makes comments to the press to that effect.
Well, the band split up over a drum machine. A drum machine. Right. Stuart Copeland, an extraordinarily talented composer, writes a lot of movie and TV soundtracks, American. The drummer gave him that great rhythm bass line. They fell out on the final album because Sting wanted to use a drum machine instead of Stuart Copeland, and it went backwards and forwards and back, and it went on for apparently hours. Mm. So this entire multi-million dollar empire fell apart because Sting wouldn't agree with the drum role in the song. That was the kind of guy, he wouldn't back down. And the thing is about Sting, right? Yes, he started off being, you know, the guy who wrote those great songs. Then he ends up being a guy who releases albums playing on a lute. Now, a lute is an Egyptian, ancient Egyptian instrument. For those who don't know, it's an ancient instrument, and it looks like a fat, sunburnt swan with strings. And he expects people to pay $200 for him to sit on this wicker basket or whatever he does and go, ding, 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 ding. Who wants to hear another song from my ancient Egyptian lute? None of us. Play Every Breath You Take. Ding, ding, ding.
He can be a bit self-indulgent.
The guy wants to save the rainforest.
Yeah.
I'm a vegetarian environmentalist. I agree with him 100%. But he flies all around the world on a private jet telling us, poor people, hey, you, consume less, consume less. He's got a carbon footprint the size of Alaska, right? But you, Jason Dacey, you, stop wasting paper. Stop wasting paper. I've done my bit. I'm off now on my private jet. You, I'm going to play lute on the private jet.
No,
absolute nonsense.
I love the Police. Sting, I quite like. I mean, If You Love Someone, Set Them Free is one of my favourite songs that he's done. He's done some really good songs. But unfortunately, I would put Sting near the top of my most overrated artist list.
So would I. Some of his lyrics have been considered by musical experts, not necessarily me, to be a little bit trite. He did have some good solo songs in the early days, but they were a bit repetitive. And the reason I can give a good example, he had this song a few years ago. You may remember it. It's Probably Me.
Yes, it was a big hit.
It had a very catchy hook at the beginning, and it was used in one of those Lethal Weapon movies. Yeah. I can't remember which one. Lethal Weapon 3, I think. And I was at university, and it was a big, it was a huge song at the time, but it was very repetitive. And an Iraqi student staying in the room next to me in my halls of residence at university, played the song on a loop endlessly because it helped him study. I hate to say it's probably me. And it's a really slow, ponderous. Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. He played it all night, Jason, studying for his finals. I hate to say it.
You're still scared.
I hate to say it. I was banging on the door. I'd go out, get drunk, come back. It's still, I hate to say it. I hate you saying it. I hate you saying it. Stop saying it. Please stop saying it.
You know,
and it was on a loop. On a loop.
One thing about him, he looks incredibly fit. He's 67 amazing. Years old. He is in incredible shape. And he's touring at the moment with Shaggy across Russia and Eastern Europe. And he tours an incredible amount of time, Neil. I looked it up. He just, when you look back at all his tours and concerts, he's done thousands of concerts in the last 30 years.
Well, he puts it down, you mentioned Shaggy, he puts it down to that, you know, 6-hour sessions with his wife. Now, he later retracted that and said, you know, the whole tantric thing.
Yes.
But who, Jason, sits in an interview and says, I keep fit by having 6 hours of intercourse with my wife?
Right.
You just don't do it, do you?
Yeah.
You don't do it. You know, the yoga sessions, famous story, he takes people out to some of his favourite restaurants around Manhattan and takes his own chef with him to cook the food that he wants.
At the restaurants.
So basically, he just wants their air conditioning. That's it. And then he gets the chef. But can I tell you my favourite story?
Yeah.
Because it's about Every Breath You Take.
Yeah, and we're going to play that in a minute. So this is a great way to wrap up this segment.
Which is probably my favourite Police song in many ways. 1997, Puff Daddy, before he became P. Diddy or Go PP, whatever he calls himself now. Puff Daddy released a song called I'll Be Missing You.
Mm.
Huge hit as a tribute to his murdered friend, the rapper, Notorious B.I.G. Biggie, as they called him, right? So I'll Be Missing You. It was a massive hit. It sold 10 million copies. It was the rap hit of the year. It won the best Grammy.
Yep.
And the reason it was so successful is because it sampled that riff from Every Breath You Take. Dun, 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 right? 10 million copies. One day, your friend, Andy Summers, right?
Yeah.
He's in his living room and his daughter says, I can hear you're playing on the radio, Daddy, right?
Wow.
And he listens and it's his riff. That was his riff. He came up with that riff in the studio, right? Now, that's the only part of the song that is sampled on the Puff Daddy song. But because Sting owns the exclusive publishing rights for the Police catalogue, Andy Summers did not receive a cent for that song.
What a story. Wow.
And Sting received millions. They calculated that when the song was number one all over the world, Sting was receiving several thousand dollars every day for a song he's not even on. He's not on it at all.
Wow.
It's just Andy Summers'
and
riff.
And none of his bandmates get any money.
No, not a cent.
Oh,
and no one's ever sampled his loot.
Oh,
no one's ever sampled his loot.
All right. Well, we'll pay tribute to Sting and the Police Every Breath You Take. This has been the Pop Culture segment with Neil Humphreys right here on Money FM 89.3.
Movements on Money FM 89.3.